What's up, everybody? Welcome to my review of AEW Blood and Guts. I was live in person, so this isn't a recap of the show that I watched on TV. I was there in the Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. I'm gonna try to just kind of go right from, you know, the beginning up through the end and try to avoid spoilers for Rampage, but I might jump around a little bit here, so just relax, sit back, hang in there with me. I'm just gonna kind of walk you through. I drove to Detroit earlier in the day and got some pizza at some little hole in the wall place. It was like a breakfast pizza. It had cheese and sauce and everything, but it was like, had like fried eggs on top of it and bacon and ham, and it was fucking phenomenal. I went with a buddy and he had tried it there before and really loved it. So that was the start of my day. I got to see a little bit of Detroit. Haven't been there in a while. Honestly, Detroit's always kind of just been a giant shithole, but it looks like they're making strides to improve a little bit. I'm not saying that they've turned around and that it's a great city again necessarily, but you can tell that they're putting some work into the city. You know, they're trying to upgrade things and clean things up a little bit, and it's a little bit more artsy than it used to be. So that was kind of cool to see. So it was a good experience just being in Detroit. It was a beautiful day. It wasn't hot and sweaty for a summer day. Us fat kids melt out in the heat, so I was worried it was going to be miserable all day. Beautiful day to be out and about. Beautiful day for a show, not too hot, not too cold. We got to the arena, parked across the street, and then just kind of walked across the street to wait in line. Somebody came up and tried to sell me a little American flag pin. And then I told him, you know, I don't have cash on me or anything. And he's just like, well, what about that bracelet? And I had a couple bracelets on my wrist and a watch on the other wrist. So I started to put that in my pocket. You know, it's like, no, I kind of like my bracelet. He's like, why not? Why not? He's trying to hustle me. And he's just like, oh, your Captain America hat. He's like, ain't that old? He's just fucking with me. So it was a little creepy, but I gave him a little fist bump ski. And he moved along and hustled other people. So got yelled at by some storekeeper because we were like lined up around the front of his store. So he kind of came home. He's like, hey, I know you guys are in line, but can you get the fuck out of my way? He didn't say it like that, but that's what he meant. I imagine it in my brain. He came out with the broom and just kind of shoot everybody with his broom. But then we got to the arena, and the outside of the arena, it's a Little Caesars Arena, is a fairly new arena. I've never been there before. It had this nice little like courtyard outside with like a big screen, and just like the outside of the building looked pretty cool going in. There wasn't that long of a wait to get in. The line was long, but it moved, you know, as soon as the doors were supposed to open, they did, and they were able to just kind of really filter people through really quick. It took a little longer. Last time I went to a live wrestling show was last summer for CM Punk's return at the United Center. And, you know, that one I felt was a very smooth process. There wasn't even a line at all. I literally was able to just walk into the building. but, you know, maybe I got here a little bit earlier for this one. Who knows? Walking in the building, nice and air-conditioned, because the arena in my hometown locally is not. So if you go in the summertime, it can get sweaty up in there. Very well air-conditioned. Beautiful arena. Massive arena. Little Caesars Arena is a big arena. It's on the bigger side. One of the bigger arenas that AEW has ran. You know, notwithstanding like the Arthur Ashe Stadium and that kind of thing, like just from an arena. It's smaller than the United Center, but bigger than probably most of the other ones. They said they had 13,000 in there. 13,000-ish was the going amount. Meltzer says it wasn't quite that. I looked every bit of it, to be honest with you. Like, there was a lot of people. The vibe was hype. Again, I noticed a difference from, like, when I go to WWE shows, it's often a lot of little kids and it's kind of sterile now. It doesn't have that rowdy rock concert feel that it used to. Now it's more of like icecapades. It really is. I don't know. Maybe some of you that have gone to like a WrestleMania where it's all the rabid, crazy fans, or even a pay-per-view show or whatever. But if you just go to like your local hometown fucking wrestling show on like a Monday or a Friday or even like a house show, it's a lot of kids and it's a lot of just you're going. It's like it's similar to when like I would take my kids to like see monster trucks and stuff like that. That's what WWE felt like. Not always, I remember going to shows back in the day that were a lot more like this AEW crowd is. But certainly modern day WWE is like going to fucking Marvel on Ice or something. It's very sterilized, but this was a rowdy crowd, not like rowdy like ECW where you think they're gonna just tear the place apart. But these were diehard fans. These were hardcore fans that knew their shit. You can just hear the chatter in lines as people are talking, and you hear people discussing MJF, what's really going on with MJF, where's he at? With chatter behind me in the seats and stuff. Like there was a part where Thunder Rosa came out, and of course that would have been on Rampage, because you're probably already watched Dynamite and go, hey, wait a minute, Thunder Rosa wasn't on there. But when she came out, the crowd was like, went nuts for her. I'm jumping ahead, of course, but just to finish my point, there's people behind me that are like, oh, I heard that she's difficult to work with or whatever. It's like, this seemed like a very smart crowd and they were there for it. This wasn't like, oh, I guess I'm gonna go see. These people were like, fuck yeah, AEW, let's go. Let's fucking go. Right? A little Tony Khan energy. So we got in, we took our seats, and the wait wasn't that long. Like, they said the doors would be at 6, and the doors were at 6. They said the show would start at 7, and I pull up my phone. It was maybe 7:05 that the first Dark Elevation match was actually hitting. So, I mean, they were right on it. The crowd was still filling in, so if you watch, like, the YouTube Darks, you'll see, like, it's very spotty. They start that show right at 7, and theoretically, if they open the doors at 6, show starts at 7, theoretically, the arena should be full, but it's not, there's a lot of latecomers, and I was paying close attention to that. I was sitting up in the, kind of in the top, not the tippity top, but, like, the, in between the tippity top and the middle, and, it was a perfect view. We had like front row, so we were like, there was nobody in front of us that we had to like, their fat heads weren't in our way or anything like that. And then there was a significant drop off. We were right at a ledge with like a glass railing. And we were sitting damn near right across from the entranceway. Like, if you shoot to the other side of the arena, so we had almost, we were basically in the middle, a little offset to the left. It was a perfect view. The only thing I couldn't see is like the speaker stacks from like the big screens that hang from the beginning, the top of the arena. The big screen and the speaker stacks did kind of block my view of the stage a little bit. So like when Tony Schiavone was out there doing an interview with Christian, for example, I couldn't see Christian. And they didn't put it up on the big screen either. So that was kind of a complaint. And furthermore, on the complaints, I'll just get these out of the way, I guess. Because, like I said, I'm going to be all over the place a little bit. I'm going to try to go in order, but as things come to me, I'm just going to say it. So there was, at least for where I was sitting, it didn't appear to be a problem anywhere else in the building because people were reacting to the promo and stuff. But from where I was sitting, the speakers just sounded muffled. So it sounded like listening to Charlie Brown's parents talk. I heard Christian, but it was wah, 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 wah. And then the crowd would go, boo. I was like, oh, he must have said something about Jungle Boy's dad again. So I didn't get to hear any of that, but that was minor because I think that was the only real promo. They had a couple pre-tapes on the screen. Young Bucks announcing a match that would happen later that night on Rampage with a couple of Japanese guys. And the show started. They ran through the dark matches. The dark matches, they move quick. I don't know if you've been to an AEW show live before, but they kind of They do him, Roberts gets in there. He warms up the crowd a little bit. He's a very good MC. I said this in my CM Punk review too, and I'm gonna double down on it here because I don't see this as much at a WWE show where the ring announcer is just kind of there to announce the information. Justin Roberts is very much like a host. He's an MC. How are you guys doing tonight? Oh, hey, it's this person's birthday out in the crowd. Everybody say happy birthday. Like, he's very engaging with the crowd. He's tremendous. He's a great guy. I couldn't hear a goddamn word he said, but he was interacting with the crowd the entire night, like in between matches and stuff like that. He was always very good at letting us know when we're going to be going live on TV. Okay, count it down. So we can all get hyped and stuff like that. He's great as always. But they'll have the jobber come down, no entrance or anything. They just kind of sneak their way along the side of the ramp. They don't even come down the ramp. They're like just sneak their way to the ring like the tech crew or something. And then the squash matches, they just, whoever comes out wrestles their match against the jobber, and then they beat the jobber, and then as soon as they get it out of the ring, and the music stops, they got the next Roberts is ready to go with the very next match. Like, there's no wait time. So they were pounding those out. Honestly, don't even remember what I saw on the dark match. Trying to remember now, and I'm just completely blanking on it. So it wasn't important, So there's that at least. Nothing significant or important happened on the dark matches. Actually, there was one where, jeez, I wish I could remember who it's gonna come to me, but somebody was, oh, okay, it was Anthony Ogogo. That's what I knew there was something from the dark matches I wanted to. Anthony Ogogo is back. I don't know, has he been back? I don't really watch Dark or Elevation at all, so you can tell me. But he looks different than he did. He looks might like he might have got just a new coat of paint, so to speak. And he was out there beating the shit out of some jobber. And at first the crowd reacted to Anthony a little bit. They were like, oh, okay, good to see this guy. And then they started cheering for the jobber. There was a legit "Let's go jobber!" Clap, 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 clap. "Let's go jobber!" And I think when that happened, I think Agogo was probably going to go for his finish sooner, but I think there was they improvised because right as that chant was happening, there was Agogo had him in a hold or something, and he let the jobber kind of break his way out and give a little fight back, but he was quickly cut off again, and I don't think we got the full appreciation of that. It would have been nice. I felt like the crowd was waiting for this guy to like hit the ropes and bust out a few clotheslines and maybe have like a two count just to like, and then a go-go could have just murdered him. But I think maybe that's maybe they were on a time crunch because I know AEW is not like their matches aren't scripted strictly, so it's not like do this. But unless they were on a major time crunch and they were just worried about that, maybe it was just that a go-go is still green. But I think that would have been a perfect spot to improvise a little shine spot for the baby face, a little comeback ski for the jobber. Just a little bit. Like I said, they did a little bit. They let him break out of the hold, but he was quickly cut off again, like almost immediately. So I felt like the crowd was kind of swelling for it, and then it was like they teased it, but they didn't fully give it to us. And I think all we would have needed was this jobber to like come back, break out of the hold. Hit the ropes, hit a couple clotheslines or something, go for a pin, drop kick, something like that. Something flashy and then get cut off. And I think the crowd would have got a good pop out of that. But that was the only thing, and that was amusing. The crowd, by the way, I guess we can just get into this now. The crowd was hot. I have not watched Dynamite back yet on, the TV taping, so I don't know. I haven't seen it or heard it, but I did watch a couple recaps on YouTube, a couple of the reviews that said that the crowd was just fire for this. So I'm glad that that came through to the TV because they were. The crowd was nutty. It wasn't as wild as like last year's CM Punk show at the United Center, but obviously, that was the biggest reaction in the history of wrestling, really. So But the Detroit crowd was on fire. They were lit. They were ready for it since we were in line. Nobody was bored. Nobody was sitting on their hands. Nobody was half-assing anything. The crowd, even late into the night, I mean, Rampage went all the way up to midnight. And then Tony Khan comes out. I'll address all of that later. But I mean, the crowd stayed for it the whole night. And you could tell that they were losing their energy. And there is an exact match that I'll get to that happened at. But I mean, they gave it their damnedest. They were there all night for it. Nothing shit the bed with the crowd. Everybody just had a great time. It seemed everybody was having fun the whole time. Everybody was fire. Everybody was reacting to everything. The chants were funny as hell. Like the "Let's go Jobber" chant. I do not believe I've ever. I can't even recall ever hearing that to begin with. I'm sure it's happened, if not on TV at an indie show somewhere or something. But just the crowd had a lot of really smart, witty chants like that throughout the night. And even like when, and I didn't even remember this, and I shame myself, you know, admonishment, admonish me for this. I shame myself for not even remembering that Claudio and Jake Hager were a tag team. So when they had the face to face in the, even my buddy who went with me, who's not even as big of a wrestling fan as me, remembered the Real Americans tag team, and the crowd was had that they the crowd popped huge for it, and I didn't get it at first, and then when my buddy told me, and then right after he told me, that's when like the "We the People's" chant, "We the People" chant came out, and it just the crowd was on it, man. You know, the crowd was lit all night long. It was not a legit sellout. Oh, if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say it was 85, 90% full. It wasn't. So the way the arena is set up, like the very, very top ring, the very top ring was full, other than like on the hard camera, not the, like the side, not where the hard camera's facing, but the side of the hard camera where all the tech people sit and work from and stuff, that side that they never show on camera. That the very top ring was tarped off. It was only that side. So if you're looking, even though the arena is a circle, if you think of it as four sides of the ring, so to speak, that side, just the very top ring, was tarped off. So that was not intended for any. And then in the middle, there's a middle ring that looks like those are like VIPs, like suite boxes or something. All of them have their own little like room, like a little kitchen with like a fridge and a bar and that kind of thing. And then they have like tables that they can view. None of those were sold. I don't know if those seats were just not available because those are, you know, like a not they weren't like the skybox because those were up at the tippy top, you know, but they were certainly some sort of VIP thing. And I've been to a lot of arenas. This is a beautiful arena. This is a very, very nice arena. And you would expect, I guess, because it's freshly made. But it's just so well built and clean and designed, and just everything was just beautiful about it. And I've seen a lot of those arenas that have those boxes, but they're just a couple. This one had it all the way around. So there was probably shit. I mean, there had to be at least 20 of them, if not more, 30, you know. So none of those were sold. And then the only other part that was there was a strip right up the middle. So like when you're looking out into the middle of the crowd and you see, you know, just the fans, and then you see the stair sets, you know, there's usually stairs that go up each side, and there's the middle row, like dead center of the ring. The middle row on, again, the side that you can't see on the hard camera where all the tech crew are, that entire middle row going up was completely empty. So there was a good slab of seats that weren't there. But in totality, and they wouldn't have shown that on camera, so you wouldn't have seen that. But in totality, like, I mean, it was a big arena. And everybody, I mean, if you told me there were 13,000 people there, I would totally believe it, you know. And it was just a great crowd, a rowdy crowd, a fun crowd, an excited crowd, a smart crowd. they were happy to be at an AEW show. There's intangibles, you know, before I get to the show itself, you know, I like to build the aesthetic and stuff. AEW has some intangibles that WWE doesn't. You know, I talked earlier about WWE shows feel different than, like, you feel like you're going to a rock concert in a way to an AEW show compared to like a monster truck show, you know, or a Disney on Ice show with WWE. There's different vibes to it. And like I said, I'm sure that's different for pay-per-views. I'm sure WWE does get really rowdy, hot crowds sometimes. But this was just fun and refreshing. And it's one of those intangibles where, you know, people criticize AEW. You know, they don't have anywhere near the ratings that WWE. You know, WWE sitting around 2 million. AEW's been struggling to top a million lately, but the people that love AEW because they were there for it. And not only were they there for it, but like I said, so I got a buddy who's kind of a casual fan. That's who I went with, more of an older school fan. So he was doing a lot of, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Who's that guy? You know what I mean? And like, just listening to just not only the reactions of the crowd, the pops that were going on, but like listening just to conversations happening all around me in the crowd. Everybody knew who everybody was. This was a smart crowd that was there for AEW the whole time. They cheered for everybody that they were supposed to cheer for. They booed everybody that they were supposed to boo for. The show kicked off live. The fireworks, the pyro show was a nice welcome because the WWE hasn't been doing that lately. And it was a cool pyro show, you know. Started off with the Orange Cassidy versus, did he wrestle? Was it Ethan Page on this one? Yeah, it was Ethan Page. So Orange Cassidy, Ethan Page, and Cassidy, man. People criticize him, like your Cornettes and shit, and your Cornette followers, the cult of Cornette, if you will. People, oh, Pockets, he's so fake and phony and blah, blah, blah. He gives sport a bad name. You know, if you listen to, like, Meltzer and stuff, you know, the reason why Tony Khan pushes him so much is because he's a giant draw for AEW. Across the board, when you're looking at the minute-by-minute of the ratings, when you're looking at merch sales, all of that. Orange Cassidy was over as fuck out there. The crowd went insane for Cassidy. And not only that, but this match was an incredible match. This was a very fun, very cool match. A lot of good spots. There was, and I'll tell you this, and this speaks to the quality of Orange Cassidy, if nothing else does. The crowd reacted. He kept building up this power slam the whole match. You know, he was doing this gimmick, you know, like, oh, I'm going to get him over my head and slam him down. You know, he did that at least twice, I think, you know, and he attempted it and he couldn't get it and he attempted it and he couldn't get it. And then whatever the sequence was, he had the orange punch and stuff like that. And then he got that fucking slam in and the crowd ate that shit up. How many wrestlers can get over a power slam? CM Punk's been able to do it. He does the power slam thing too, and he looks at the crowd and smiles and they want another one. So he's been able to do it. I firmly believe at this point, you know, when you look at The Rock's People's Elbow and shit like that, you can get any move over. Anything, no matter how lame and weak sauce it may be in anybody else's match, if you build it right, whether it's your finisher and it's just part of your shtick, or like The Rock's People's Elbow, right? Or in this case, just the way that Orange Cassidy worked this match. He worked towards that power slam, and when he got it, he could have did, it was the same reaction he would have got from any kind of 750 flippy floppy Conrana Hornaday off the top rope. You know what I'm saying? Like, fucking amazing. Like, the crowd ate up that entire match. They went out there and they worked their asses off to warm up the crowd, and they did great. Christian did his promo, and like I said, I couldn't hear a word he was saying. I could hear the crowd oohing, though, like, oh, he didn't just say that. So I know he was, excuse me. I know that he must have been dropping some bombs like he did with Jungle Boy's dad the week before. You know, he's just going that route. Christian's a great heel. He got major heat there. He really did, even from when his music played. And I don't know if this is just because the crowd is good at playing along with the story, or if Christian is just legit getting himself the fuck over as a bad guy right now. But like, when his music started playing and he got announced, he got a huge boo from the crowd, like a big time boo. And while he was talking, he was getting booed. And I think he got the shut the fuck up chant, the shut the fuck up. That happened, that happened during his promo. He got that really loud. At least it was really loud where I was at. Everybody, you know, it sounded like the arena was just fucking shitting all over Christian, which was amazing. Then they brought out the Luchasaurus, and he's got like the darker imagery now. It wasn't a black mask. I keep saying it. Everybody's saying it's a black mask. It's like a very dark green, very dark green. So I mean, you wouldn't be mistaken if you called it black, but it was, from like the big screens in the arena, you know, like a giant fucking wall of screen. You could tell that it was kind of like a dark green still. I don't think the crowd knew exactly what to think of this, because I don't think Luchasaurus is that old. He used to get big pops, like, in the tag team matches and stuff, so I think, I can't say I don't think he's over, but maybe this heel thing, people don't know what to think about it. They botched this whole heel turn for Luchasaurus, by the way. I don't think it's been addressed, at least on anything that I've seen. I don't know that it's been addressed as to why Luchasaurus is suddenly just, like, hanging out with Christian, but excuse me. But what I would have done is I love the Christian heel turn, and I love what he's doing. So I can't, in hindsight, like, they're doing good with it, but this is, I don't know if this is just the amateur booking of Tony Khan or just, I don't know. But here's how you should have did this, okay? What you should have did, you should have took after you, Jungle Boy should have lost the belts. He should have taken a pin, and then at that point, Luchasaurus should have turned on him, not Christian. Maybe Christian could have then came in the ring and been like, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? Don't do that. And then got that little creepy little bastard smile on his face and and joined in, you know, maybe threw a couple boots to Jungle Boy, and then, like, you know, taking Lucha's side as his manager and maybe like the corrupting force behind corrupting them. They're still doing that same thing, but they did it in the wrong way. What I would have had Luchasaurus just destroy Jungle Boy. Like, I mean, beat him down to where you got to put him off TV for like a month, right? Beat him down, and then he should have peeled that mask off and dropped it right down next to Jungle Boy. And then the camera could have pan down and caught that view of Jungle Boy, maybe bloodied up, maybe not, but just laying unconscious with the mask laying on the ground next to him. And now a new fully healed Luchasaurus with the mask off as his handsome self that he is, with Christian as his heel corrupting manager. That's how I would have did it. I think that they're essentially going the same direction, though. They just went about it a different way than I would have. But I feel like that would have had more effect. I had always said that because I was kind of bored with the Jurassic Express team to begin with. I like Jungle Boy a lot, but Luchasaurus kind of bores me to tears. So I'd kind of in my own head been pitching for a while, like, yeah, Luchasaurus needs to turn on Jungle Boy. And they could have a good feud, but it needed to be like a blood feud. It needed to be like when Shawn turned on Marty. Of course, it wouldn't have ever had that effect. We're still talking about that today, and they were megastars. But like, just the emotional effect of, oh my God, oh, he did that. Oh, you know, like, those moments are few and far between in wrestling, and I feel like they were halfway there with the Christian thing, but they didn't quite nail it. But I'm trying to remember. Oh, there was another match. Yes. Like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't forget about this one. Danhausen. I was excited to see Danhausen. Was going to be on the show, like physically on the show. I'm a big Danhausen mark, as most of you, I think, are. Just from, you know, well before he was in AEW, just from discovering his work on YouTube, basically. He's a fun personality. So I was very excited to see him live and in person. I would have been happy just to see him physically, but to actually get a match with him, especially because he's just now coming off injured, it felt like a treat to get to see Danhausen wrestle. But dude, let me tell you, I don't know what I think I was expecting. I would have expected Hook and then maybe somebody else, you know. But it did pop in my head that it could be FTR just because they weren't booked on the show. But when FTR's music hit, bro, the crowd went insane. They are the fuck over. They are mega over. At least in Detroit, dude, those guys got the pop. Danhausen got a huge pop. FTR got a huger pop. Like, man, the crowd was just, they were all in on that shit, you know? And I was super excited because I'm a mega FTR fan as well. And I would have been disappointed had I not gotten to see FTR in action. You know, it's one of those things, and you do that with WWE too. I think there's a couple guys that have eluded me over the years in WWE. But as a fan that goes to live shows, you kind of, at least for me, I don't necessarily, one, because I can't afford it, but two, like, I don't seek to go to every show that I can anytime it comes around. If I'm able to, I will, but sometimes I miss them and stuff. But for me, what I want out of going to a live show is I want to, I guess, be able to look back and say, I saw that guy live, I saw that guy live, I saw that guy live. I want to be able to say that I saw basically everybody that's a favorite of mine live and in person. Cody's one who eluded me. He was not at the United Center show where CM Punk made his return. He was not on that show at all in any way, shape, or form. Never came out. He was still with AEW at that time. And now, you know, obviously he's gone. So I would have to go to a WWE show to see him. And I'd have to wait 9 months to do that because he's injured. I think I might have saw him as Stardust or. No. I did see Cody Rhodes. I went to the Royal Rumble that Randy Orton won. And it was like, at the end, it was like Legacy, and it was Randy and Cody and Ted DiBiase all in the ring against like one other guy. I don't remember who that other guy. It was one baby face against those three heels. And, you know, and then Cody and Ted got eliminated, and then Randy finally got the win. So it was one of those deals. So yeah, I've seen Cody live, but not Cody Rhodes, you know, not the new Cody, not this presentation. So he's one that's eluded me, but I always strive to hopefully see everybody live. I'll tell you know, my buddy was really excited to see CM Punk. He's a big Punk mark, and he's a casual fan, so he doesn't watch it on the regular. So he doesn't know who a lot of these guys, doesn't have a lot of other selling points on the roster to work with. And, you know, Bryan Danielson, gone. Adam Cole, gone. So guys that he would know just weren't on the show at all in any capacity. I was highly disappointed Punk wasn't there. He's my favorite. I make no bones about that. If you were a regular listener or watcher of my podcast, the Pro Wrestling Podcast, you'll know that Punk's my dude. But, you know, so it sucked that he wasn't there, but I get it. And they did the best they could. There was no MJF, there was no Britt Baker. Like I said, no Adam Cole, obviously no Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish. I think both of them are out injured. Bobby, I think, is kayfabe, but Kyle's hurt for real. It was just slim pickings. They did on Rampage really make up for the guys that weren't on Dynamite. So I know if you're thinking like, well, yeah, the Blood and Guts match took up an hour of the show, so there wasn't really many people on Dynamite. They certainly made up for that on Rampage. And I will try to address that without spoiling anything, though nobody really cares about Rampage, right? So, yeah, huge pops all around for FTR and Danhausen. Everything they did in the ring, the crowd was just, they were in it the whole time. Nobody got bored. There were no hands, nobody sitting on their hands. There was nobody kind of like, meh, okay, this is meh. None of that, dude. None of that for the Ethan Page, Orange Cassidy match. Of course, that was the opener of Dynamite, you know, like there were dark matches, but that was the opener. And the dark matches don't get that exciting either, you know, they don't have that back and forth. They're usually squash matches with one, like, main event that's, like, jobbers that you know versus jobbers that you know. Yeah, it was like Dark Order versus The Family, you know, QT, and it was, who cares, right? So, but yeah, FTR over as fuck in Detroit. Nothing more, much more I can say about that, just that the match was hot the whole time. You know, the crowd was there for it. They were there for every hot tag. They were there for the whole situation. Danhausen gets the win there. Young Bucks came on. I couldn't hear anything that they had to say other than it sounded like they had said that they were going to have a match. I heard them say this week on Rampage. So I was like, okay, we're going to see Young Bucks wrestle tonight. Dope. Because they tape Rampage after Dynamite. And then they went right into Blood and Guts. And just the spectacle of this, I should address this. I haven't mentioned this yet. But the two rings, the double cage, double rings, the spectacle of this, that's another thing. You know how I said, like, I like to be able to look back and say, oh, I saw this live and I saw that live. You know, one thing I haven't seen is a WrestleMania, for example. I really want to. But seeing, like, these gimmick matches, you know, I've gotten to see an Elimination Chamber live before. I've seen a Royal Rumble live before. I have seen a steel cage match. It was a house show steel cage. It was John Cena versus Kane in a steel cage. But, you know, so I've seen some of these matches before, but there's an element of, like, you feel like you're watching something special when you see that, because you don't see it every day. It happens, this is only the second Blood and Guts ever in AEW history. It looks like it'll probably be a yearly thing, but really, like, there have, even in the, including NXT and even WCW and NWA, there have not been very many War Games matches in the history of professional wrestling. This is still a very unique thing. And just seeing the production setup of it, seeing the two rings, seeing the cage hanging from the, and I always get, like, paranoid when I see that. I see the cage. And I'm always like, oh, is the arena going to hold that cage? What if it falls? Ah! I will say, you know, spoiler alert, the Sammy going off the top, I will say that table, I spotted that from the second I sat down. I came in, and I'm just looking at the arena and shit, like, you know, checking everything out, and I leaned over to my buddy, and I was just like, hey, watch that table tonight. I was like, that table doesn't look right, because it was wider. It was like a double table. That's where the announcer or the timekeeper sits, so that was where you would see an AEW table, but it was wider. It looked like it was, at the very least, it was two tables, but I would imagine because of the height of the dive that they probably had a crash pad underneath it too. But yeah, I spotted it from a mile away. I didn't hear anybody else talking about it until actually once they were up on top of the cage, I heard somebody from behind me go, oh, look at those tables down there. Those tables, that doesn't look right. You know, so somebody else noticed it, but it wasn't until they were already on top of the cage and they were like kind of expecting somebody to go off or hoping or waiting with bated breath to see if that would happen. The Jericho came out, and my God, is Jericho over too. Like, the crowd was there for everything, man. Like, Jericho, I was excited. I have not. I'm sure I've seen Jericho at some point in WWE, though I don't remember. So it wasn't in any kind of prominent position, if it was. But he was another one that wasn't at the United Center when CM Punk did his return. So that was another one. I was like, fuck, I really wanted to see Jericho. And because even if you like, Jericho's past his prime, and yeah, fuck all of that. Because when you get into the arena, you want to see the stars. I thought to myself, when I woke up that day, I was like, who am I really excited to see? And Jericho was kind of top of my list because, Punk wasn't going to be there, and Brian wasn't going to be there, and Adam Cole wasn't going to be there. So I would say top of my list after that was Jericho, to be honest with you. And then right after that, it was Sting. I wanted to see Sting. And that's what I was excited to see. And those are your established megastars. So kind of, I guess that's how that works out. But Jericho was over as fuck, at least for the entrance. That the Judas song is a winner. I get why the crowd enjoys that. I've never actually been a part. I've never attended an AEW show that Jericho wrestled in, so I've never had the opportunity to sing Judas live. And that's why it happens that you'd think that that would get played out after a certain amount of time, but it doesn't because people want to do it. People like me that are at their first show that see it on TV all the time, you're dying to sing Judas. So I was very excited. I was nudging my boy. I was like, Jericho, here we go. And I had every word, and everybody around me, every word, the whole, every is. As far as I could tell, every single person in the arena was singing the goddamn song. I'm sure people were sitting it out, but like literally, it was all around me. It was down on the floor. You could hear it. And then people were going crazy, as it picks up. The crowd's just fucking all over it. I don't know what else to say. Like, I'm smiling, I'm trying to put it into words, but there was a magic to it that I don't think. Whether you're a Jericho hater nowadays, or you're bored with Jericho, or you think the whole thing's gotten stale, it's just a little anecdotal from a live show as to why I think it's still over like that, why everybody still sings it. Yeah, it's just so fun. Like, the people were screaming, "What have I become now that I've betrayed?" Everybody's just fucking screaming it, like they're in it. They're singing their hearts out like they're in the shower or like in their car or something. It's so fun. And I get why that's a thing. So that was cool. But after that, they were kind of booed. Their outfits were ridiculous. I remember looking at my buddy like, what the fuck are they wearing? He got a laugh out of it too. He was cracking up. He thought that was good shit. And the suspenders and. Red was a strange choice just because you knew there was going to be blood. Usually you want the blood to stand out. That's not to say you wear white all the time either, but it was just a weird choice for a match that was going to have a lot of blood. Then came the good guys. So, shit, who came out first? I think it was Eddie and Santana and Ortiz, wasn't it? They were the first to come out. And Eddie is another one that was super over. I'm talking, if you want to talk like top reactions of this entire show, right? Just pure like, holy shit, we're here for this guy. It's going to be, well, we'll get to that at the end. We'll save that for the end because it's going to interrupt the rest of this experience here. But Eddie got a killer reaction. Eddie's over as fuck. He's a star. He's a mega star. People just respect Eddie Kingston. I don't think anybody, even if he's not a favorite of yours, I don't think anybody could say any could really everybody's got respect for Eddie. Let's just put it that way. People respect Eddie Kingston. And it was the pop was for him because people were chanting Eddie. People love Proud and Powerful too, and I certainly do. But the reaction was for Eddie, at least from everybody. People were chanting Eddie's name. Me personally, even like I was like, oh yeah, Eddie Kingston, fuck yeah. I'd almost like I knew he was gonna be in the match, but he was just like out of mind until his music actually hit, and then I was just like, oh, yes. So it was cool. It was an organic reaction, and the crowd ate him up too. And then Wheeler Yuta came out. Yuta had his fans. It wasn't the biggest reaction of the night, but it was still a big reaction. And he got a lot of chants. There was a lot of people like cheering for Yuta, and we want Yuta, let's go Yuta. Like a lot of Yuta stuff going on. But it wasn't like the Eddie Kingston pop, you know. And Jericho didn't get the pop necessarily, like when he came out, but the song. He got the song. Everybody was there for the song. But then you want to talk pop of the night. And this is why I kind of stopped myself when I was about to kind of rank the pops with Eddie, is because when Moxley came out, bro, Moxley, he's not as over with me as he seems to be with everybody else. I don't hate Moxley. He's just not like on my favorites. You know, I certainly appreciate Moxley, respect Moxley. I don't mind Moxley, but he's not like, I don't know that I'm going to run out and buy a ticket to see John Moxley defend the title. You know what I mean? I'll run out and buy a ticket for Punk. I'll buy a ticket for Blood and Guts. You know, even if I knew Punk was already hurt, I probably would have bought the ticket for Blood and Guts. But if this show was just like a show like it was the week before in Milwaukee, which was a damn good show. A lot of good shit on that show, but it was just like an average show. You know, it was just another good AEW show. Blood and Guts was an event. This was a pay-per-view quality show. You know, this was really a really big deal. So, you know, I don't think I would have bought a ticket for Moxley, but this Blood and Guts had me sold. So Moxley, but I would have been in the minority because he was undoubtedly the biggest pop of the night. Moxley got the biggest reaction out of everybody. And there was a lot of good pops going on out there. Orange Cassidy got a really good pop. FTR got a very good pop. Danhausen got a decent pop. Eddie Kingston got a major pop. But then it was taken to the next level. And he just, like, the crowd was just insane for him. And when he was walking around in the crowd and, like, working the crowd, and he was a star. All eyes were on him, even though he's down with the people and, like, blending in. Like, you never lost track of Moxley because he's got that swagger and he carries himself. Plus that belt, that fucking belt will blind your ass from the stands, up in the fucking cheap seats. Looking down, that fucking belt was bling, 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 bling. In your face the whole time. It was great. It was amazing. Yeah, and then the Blood and Guts started. So Moxley, major reaction, and then the fucking war began. And it started off a little slow, and I will say this. Here's another complaint. When you're sitting up at the top, that the roof on the cell actually blocks the view. Like, it's not see-through. It's it's like a grate almost, instead of like the fencing, it's like a grate of some kind. It's hard to explain. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but it's like, and they might have had a good couple good shots of it while they were on top of the cage, so you might know exactly what I'm talking about. I think it was made that way, obviously, not just to hold the cage, but to be very sturdy for people to be up there and not have to worry about McFoley-ing through the cage, right? But it was so thick that it was like not see-through. There was a square in the middle that was see-through. That looked like it was like built a little bit different. And then there was like a really wide border around that was like almost solid metal. So you couldn't really see through it. Or if you could, you could barely. And because I was on the far end of the arena, it was when they were in the first ring, like closest to the entrance ramp. I could barely see shit. But when they came on over into the second ring, now I could see through the side of the cage and I could pretty much see what was going on. But at least in those situations, they have on the big screen, you know, they show you the what's going on in the ring just like you see it on TV. But again, you don't pay to go see a live show to watch it on TV, you know, unless you're going to a movie, then that's exactly what you do. But regardless, that's not why I was there. So it started off slow. Sammy kind of did, it was kind of cool when Sammy did the like bounce. He was like a fucking, I don't know, the weird shit he was doing in there. Cesaro got a pretty good pop, I guess. I forgot to mention Cesaro's entrance. He got a very good pop too. It wasn't Moxley size pop though, even so. You know, Cesaro got a very good pop, but it still wasn't a Moxley pop. Moxley was like, it was a, just a different level. And I apologize for leaving that out because I'm sure there's tons of Claudio fans out there that are like, bro, you forgot Claudio. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But yeah, he was in there kicking ass and just started off slow until a few of the other guys got in there. And then the gimmicks started to come out, right? I don't remember the exact order, but I'm sure Moxley introduced him. He brought in the chair to start with. And then he had Moxley had his fork. He forked the shit out of Daniel Garcia. That got a good reaction out of my buddies. It's like, I stabbed him with a fork. Like my buddy like almost kind of cringed on that one. You know, that was a that got him. Fun fact, actually, not to put myself over, but I actually have a scar on my head from being attacked by a fork in a professional wrestling ring. So at an indie show, I was like the commissioner guy. And the top bad guy was beating, the bad guy faction was beating up the baby faces, and I came out to like try to take some control, and then I got attacked with the fork and bled and stuff. It was, yeah. So forks, no joke. You can't play around with the forks. Got a scar to this day from them bitches. But anyway, Daniel Garcia was forked open by Moxley. Then Moxley, I noticed this. I don't know how many. You have to be a death match aficionado, otherwise you're probably just looking at like, what the fuck is Moxley have now? He had these the, I guess they're are they skewers like barbecue skewers that you put like for like forgot the name of those things, the things that you put on shish kebabs, right? Shish kebab sticks or something, I don't know. They're like barbecue skewers, they're like wooden spikes basically. And on indie shows, Moxley, poor Matt Menard, dude. He got him in the forehead, but Moxley was like trying to jam him. I don't know if you saw that. He was like really pounding on him. And then like they broke. And it almost looked like Moxley hurt his hand. I think I saw him go like that a little bit. Like maybe one of them just jabbed into his hand when they broke. And then like I guess he just let him go, and then Menard was just bleeding. But if you ever watch an indie show, what those things are supposed to do, you'll see it on YouTube if you go look it up. Like there's some real hardcore death matches where the skewers were brought out. So as soon as he had those, I was like, oh God, I know what those are. But he didn't. It didn't work for some reason. What they're supposed to do is he stick them in his head. You could do it in the forehead, and then they stick. And you like you hold them like all in one like thing and they're all pointed and somehow probably by just forcefully inserting multiple spikes into your face and head, but then they're supposed to like poof, they're like the points stick in the head and then they kind of fan out, so you got this like weird like spiky, it can look cool but it's very brutal. And poor Matt Menard, I think, just, you know, props for even attempting to take that, because I don't think I would, you know, like a fork, sure. A handful, like 10 fucking wooden skewers, eh, it's a bit much for me, I think. Especially because that's why Moxley broke them. He was trying to jam them in because the idea is to get them in hard enough to where they stick out of the head and then they have that gross effect. It was probably worse that they didn't stick. He probably caused more damage, probably splinters in Menard's head and shit. That one was a bit much. Moxley had another set in his back pocket. I don't know if he just put the sticks back in his back pocket or if he had another set, but I saw he had them in his back pocket after that. So, but he never busted them out again. He did, however, bust out some glass. That was another one that got a really sick reaction from the crowd. Everybody thought it was thumbtacks. You did too, watching TV, right? You know, the bag, and you're like, oh, here comes the thumbtacks. You know, I said to my buddy, yeah, it's a thumbtacks. And it was like, oh, nope, broken glass. That was another one that people were really cringing about, that one. Not in a bad way. It's just like it went that extra mile to like, oh, ooh, ew, oh, ouch. It was just a couple pieces of glass. I've heard some people on some of the reviews that I've listened to on YouTube already that were like, ah, the glass is a step too far. And maybe so. There were just a couple little pieces. And certainly like the pile driver on them, for example, that's not going to hurt anybody. And then when Moxley took it, this really made the crowd cringe. It made me cringe. I was like, oh, yeah, this is too much. He took the glass and he was like gigging people basically with it. I don't know that he was actually, you know, ever made any contact or anything like that. But just the idea of Moxley's a sick fuck. He's a sick, sick fuck. That's that GCW shit. That's that Nick Gage type shit. You know what I mean? But that was a brutal one that really got the crowd kind of gasping and almost a step too far. Not in like a bad too far. It's just that was the one that really got them, you know. I guess Santana got hurt somewhere in here. That I did not see. I am hearing that he got injured in the match, something with a knee buckling. I didn't get to see any of that at all from where I was. You did start to see the guys. I covered the spot where the We the People spot with Hager and Claudio. That was really cool. That was quite the moment for the crowd. And like I said, I'm a bit ashamed of myself for not catching on to that one. I can't believe I forgot. Completely forgot about the Real Americans. But yeah, the crowd was all over that one. They were loving it. So that was a really smart spot to build into the match, to allow those two to have that moment and let the crowd react to that. That was really smart. They probably could have milked it a little bit. I felt like they went at each other a little quicker than, you know, than need be. You know, they probably could have milked that a little further, acknowledged each other or something a little bit more. But yeah, I don't know, they went at it. It was a good little tease there. I'm sure I'm forgetting shit, but I'm getting close to, you know, I'm over an hour now or close to an hour here on talking. So they worked their way to the top, and there's some really fun stuff going on with this. So if you're hanging in here with me, I'm appreciating that you do, because this live perspective stuff's the best. So I already told you that I had kind of pinpointed that table. You might have even on camera. I don't know if they hit it or not, or if they did show it and people on camera could clearly see, like, that's a weird-looking table. But definitely, like, I saw it coming a mile away. It was just a matter of who. You know, and I was even unsure, even after seeing that, I was like, oh, you know, you think we'll see anybody come off the top? My buddy's like, oh, yeah, somebody's going off the top of that. And when they were up there, it was Jericho and Kingston, wasn't it, to start with? And then Sammy got up there. And I kind of knew at that point that it was going to be Sammy's crazy ass that took that bump. And he did. And the crowd went as insane as you would expect. Or that you heard watching the show, you know, coming through the screen. There was a very strong, oh my God. You know, it was perfect. You know, I did capture that on film too, I believe. So.
No way.
Oh!
Yeah, the crowd, it was so cool to see that kind of bump. And that's the spectacle of the blood and guts, you know, not only all the violence, the hardcore deathmatch type stuff, but also just the crazy bump. Not to say somebody needs to come off the top of the cage in every single match, but I appreciated being able to see it. And there's another thing, you know, is like, oh, why do these guys take all these crazy bumps all the time? And what's the need to always feel the need to do that? The need is that these guys are entertainers and performers, and they want that reaction from the crowd that we gave them. And when Sammy came off the top, he got the exact reaction that made him go, I want to come off the top of the cage. And look, you might say, like, why would you do that for just a pop from a cheap pop from the crowd? It wasn't a cheap pop. I don't think falling off the cage is a cheap pop. I think that's well earned, even though, you know, it's a gimmick for sure. But we as a crowd appreciated seeing that. It's the just really the only way I can put that is like, Sammy put his body on the line to entertain the crowd, but we didn't just go, oh, it was another spot. You do when you're on TV. And I'll admit to that. You know, if I saw this on TV, I'd be like, oh, crazy Sammy doing a bump. But it's different for the live crowd. It just is. I don't, I, it, when you watch it on TV, it's like, it's, you know, it's real, but it's that separation of reality a little bit, and you're just like, oh yeah, of course somebody's going off the top of the cage, and it's Sammy. Why wouldn't he? They do it all the damn time. Every show is, they put their bodies on the line, they do these stupid bumps. But just sitting, like, that was one of the probably that's probably the craziest, like, live action bump I've ever seen in real life. The only time I've ever seen somebody do like a big stunt like that. And the crowd, like, we appreciate Sammy for doing that. You know what I mean? Like, the crowd really respected that. They were gasping, they were oh my godding, they were buzzing about it long after. So it wasn't just this spot that happened on TV. It was like, it affects you when you see it happen in real life. So it's, I think that's why, you know, that reaction that they get from the crowd when they do that, it's different than what the nerds on the internet that listen to Jim Cornette and think everybody that doesn't do a headlock, drop down, tackle, takeover, fucking whatever the fuck, toe hold, twist, is a spot monkey. And they can be to a certain extent, but I think just put yourself in the shoes of somebody attending a show live. And how much you would appreciate that, and how much, like, when you if you were to watch a Blood and Guts live and somebody didn't come off the top of the cage and you were there, you're like, man, that would have been cool if somebody came off the top of the cage, right? Like, you know you would. So it's like, you gotta give the people what they want. Tony Schiavone got a good little pop a couple times too, by the way. So then that happened, and then, geez, what else happened? Cesaro went up to the, Claudio went up to the top of the cage, and then Matt Menard found his way up there, and then they did like the double submission thing. And I guess the story that they were telling on TV was that Claudio and Eddie were trying to outdo each other because they don't like each other. That didn't play off to the arena. Like, all you saw was like the double submissions going on, and I was just kind of surprised to see the tap out, but. Here's where some of the fun stuff comes. They did the thing where everybody came up on top of the cage after to celebrate. And John Ma. Oh, no. Nope, no. I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go back because there was a spot that freaked me the fuck out. Oh my God. So people were cringing over the glass, right? People were cringing over the bump off the top. No. Claudio's crazy fucking ass. This man is insane. He's insane. There was a spot where he was started running towards somebody up there. I think it was Jericho, but he just full dash. And Claudio is a big beast of a man, right? He's probably the tallest guy in that match. Maybe not, because Hager. But, you know, he's a big guy, strong guy. Intimidating just to see that man running at you at full speed. But on top of the cage, like, I felt like I had anxiety for the people up there. Like, not just because I am afraid of heights, but, like, seeing that man rush at me, like, I would immediately, like, feel like I'm going to get speared off of the cage. Like one of the old WWE games where you could, remember the cage was always gimmick, so you'd go through it or through the side, but I always used to like spear people off of the cage or like something crazy like that. But, and then when he did the giant swing, this is what got me. He did the big swing on Jericho, and he was nowhere near the center of the cage. As a matter of fact, from my perspective, if as they were going around, Jericho's like head and hands were probably over the edge of the cage. Literally, all it would have took was Cesaro's feet to slip or his grip to slip. If there was somebody's boots were sweaty somehow, you're sweating through your boots, your hands are sweaty. Now look, if we're gonna do a spot where I get swung around in circles on top of a 20-foot cage, Cesaro is going to be the guy I trust to do it, right? He's strong. He's a beast. He's strong as fuck, you know? If anybody's going to be able to hold on to your ass to do that, it's him. So I would, if I'm going to work up the nerve to do this spot, I'm going to trust Cesaro more than anybody else. Claudio more than anybody else. But that had me. That's where I was, like, cringing. That's where I was literally like, this is too much. That's too much. I was yelling. I was like, that's too much. You're too close to the edge. Knock it off. Stop that. Just freaking out, dude. That made me panic. Like, big time panic. That was one time I was really scared for somebody. But I guess I, like I said, I just kind of put trust that Claudio is strong enough to handle it. But I was worried for Jericho, for sure. And not only that, but there was, you see guys running around, especially like Claudio was running. These other guys were being very gingerly up there, you know, with how they were moving around. But what I was going to get at, Moxley went up there. You could physically see, I don't know if you saw it on camera, but Moxley's, this motherfucker's scared of heights. I don't know if he's ever said that, but you can see it. And him trying to go up, he was shaking his ass off the whole time to go up to the top. And then even after, like when they were doing the celebrations, he was the very last guy to leave. And he took forever to leave. You know, it was probably well off of air by then. But Moxley was up there. He spent a lot of time just sitting up there. And he started taking off his boots. And I didn't understand what was going on there. And my buddy told me he's probably got thumbtacks stuck in his boots from all the bajillion of thumbtacks I don't even remember talking about. Somehow we missed, not, there was like, what, 3-4 bags of thumbtacks, not just one. So they covered the whole ring in thumbtacks, basically. But they were in the guy's boots. And it was in, I think, Jericho. I saw him playing with his boots or plucking things out, too, a little bit. Because that's dangerous. You're up there walking around. Now you don't have the grip and the texture of your boot, the soles of your boots anymore. Now you just got these rounded metal tacks. And that's dangerous for running around, walking around up on a fucking 20 foot. If it wasn't 20 feet, it looked every bit 20 feet. It was high. AEW's cages are very high. And that was a very tall, tall cage. And Moxley was just scared shitless. It was funny. Everybody else had come down. Everybody else had left. Everybody else was on the ramp, like, celebrating, waving to the crowd. Moxley was still up there, and he's, like, holding on to the wire that, like, holds the corner of the cage. And you could see him. He's trying to figure out his footing. He's looking down. It was great. Poor Moxley. Should have never been on top of the cage to begin with. He was the most scared of heights up there. He was the most nervous to get down. And it looks like it's fairly sturdy trussing, like in the corners. It's basically like a ladder. You know, that should be fairly sturdy as long as you got a good grip on everything. But he was holding onto that wire, clutching it. And you could see him shave. It was so funny. It was funny, Because everything was fine. But that poor Moxley had a rough night in the office that night. He did. He was scared there. So that was Blood and Guts. We'll get into a little bit of Rampage without the spoilers and just other little notes and tips if you like here. Tony Khan came out immediately after that. It might have even been while Moxley was still trying to find his way down. And he was his typical overly hyped. My buddy even asked, he's like, is that guy on coke for real? Like, probably. Because he was wild. He was freaking out. I couldn't hear a goddamn word he said. But he came out and did his little rah-rah. And you've seen him on YouTube. There's clips of it and stuff. But he's done his little rah-rah speeches. He comes out and does them before the show and after the show or whatever. He did come out before the show too, and it was just like, we're happy to be in Detroit. It's our first time here. We're going to give you a good show, that kind of thing. But he came out and he's just like, fuck yeah, Detroit. He's like, you guys are the greatest crowd, or one of the greatest crowds. I heard him say that, he was very, very clear, like, he was so appreciative, and it was a little bit, like, he said the same kind of thing in Chicago, too, but that was, maybe he does this in every town, because he did do the same thing in Chicago, but he actually came out multiple times. He came out after that, like, right after Dynamite, to just wild out, and then they spent a lot of time, like, cleaning up and decluttering the ring and everything like that. And then before Rampage was about to go live, Tony came out again. And he was just like, again, I just really want to, like, he put over the crowd again. And that's why I'm saying maybe he does this every show, because he did do it at the Chicago show. But even then, I don't remember him coming out multiple times to say it. He came out once to thank the crowd and say we were awesome in Chicago for Punk. But, like, this guy, he came out again. He's like, I really mean it. Like, you guys are just such a great crowd. One of the best crowds we've had. He did definitely said those words, one of the best crowds we've had. And, he could say that to all the ladies. He'd just say that to all the ladies. But it felt real because he was very nerdy and eccentric and excited about it. And then he did say something. I heard him say that he's something to the effect of, he wants to come back with a pay-per-view. Like, he was very hyped about how well it went here, and that he feels that Detroit needs a pay-per-view. He said something to that effect. I didn't catch it all, but I definitely heard him say something to that effect. Then he's like, all right, well, we're going to go live. We're going to start Rampage soon. He's like, I'm gonna come back out right before then. So literally, like, 5 minutes later, they're ready to start Rampage, and he comes out again. This would have been the fourth time now that he came out, and this time it was just to hype up Rampage. Let's go, everybody, and getting everybody all hyphy. And then he promised, I actually recommend watching this Rampage, and here's why. He came out and said that because Detroit was such a good crowd, and because he explained he originally had, like, a six-man tag plan for Rampage or something, and then, one of those people got hurt or something like that. So he's like, so what do I do? So he decided he wanted to do something special that he's never done before. And because they had the two rings there, so similar to, like, remember the old two-ring battle royals? This was before World War III in WCW. Like, even in the 70s and stuff, they would do, like, two-ring battle royals. So because they had the two rings there, he wanted to do a 20-man Royal Rampage. And it was a Royal Rumble format. And I won't spoil anything, but I do want to tell you a few things here. So you can just shut off now if you don't want to hear anything. But I'm not going to ruin anything for you, but I'm going to hopefully just get you hyped, okay? So, because it was the two rings, it was a Royal Rumble format, but instead of starting with two guys, they started with two guys in each ring. So it started with four guys, two guys in this ring, two guys in that ring, and then every 2 minutes another guy came out. And they loaded this with stars. That was another thing Tony said when he came out. He's like, I'm going to give you all the stars. I'm going to give you all the star power. The only thing he said is that he said that Sting, you know, maybe Sting's going to win it. But Sting wasn't even in it. I was disappointed Sting came out because Darby Allin did appear. He was in the Battle Royal, and Sting walked him out just to the, like, ramp, and then he turned around and left, and that was the only Sting we saw the entire night, so I was very disappointed in that, but at least I got to physically see Sting. I got to physically set eyes on Sting, because he was at that Chicago show, too, because him and Darby were up in the rafters, but from where I was sitting, when Punk returned, I couldn't see them up in the rafters, so all I could see was them on the big screen, so certainly in the same building as them on a show that they were on, but I couldn't physically see them with my eyes, and then I ducked out during the main event of that one, which was like Moxley versus Daniel Garcia to beat Traffic, and I missed. They did like the after show things that Tony Khan does, where he comes out with a couple of the wrestlers, and apparently Sting was there, so he came out to like talk to the crowd, and I missed that shit, and that made me so sad. So I was excited to see Sting, and all I fucking got was him walking Darby to the ring. But Darby was in this thing, you know, just for star power. Hangman Page was in it. Trying to think of who else might have been in there. But you know who else was really over? The Acclaimed. The Acclaimed are really, really hot. I didn't catch Max Caster's rap, but I know he mentioned something about a juggalo, Danhausen being a juggalo, which was funny because ICP, the Insane Clown Posse, their fans are juggalos. They're from Detroit, so it was a Detroit reference too. Plus, you know, if you know me from my show, I wrote a book about the gathering of the Juggalos. So, yeah, that was fun to see. You know, they got some good pops there. I'm trying to think of who else might have been in that Battle Royal. They did load it up. There were some pretty good names in there that made me excited. Where I felt like, you know, I felt like I got to see mostly everybody that I could. Like I said, there was no MJF. There was no Punk, no Bryan Danielson, no Adam Cole, no Britt Baker. Let's see. Ruby Soho made an appearance at some point in the night. Jade Cargill, also very over. She was on Dynamite, wasn't she? I skipped that match. She was on Dynamite. And Jade Cargill, the crowd really likes her. She wasn't like amongst the biggest pops of the night, but the crowd really, really likes her. You know, they respect her. You can tell. It wasn't like, oh, boo, popcorn match. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, Jade's my bitch. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that was cool. I think, was that one? No, Ruby didn't come out during that. I don't know. Thunder Rosa made an appearance at some point. But, yeah. The Young Bucks match. The Young Bucks had their match, their tag team match against the two Japanese guys. I gotta tell you, I'm not familiar. I am very familiar usually with all the Japanese guys. And there was people behind me that seemed very hyped about the two Japanese guys, and I think I've heard one of their names, Hiromu Goto. I'm familiar with his name, but I couldn't pick him out of a lineup, or couldn't say I was excited, but the people behind me were really, really excited about that. So, but that was the one match. They faced the Young Bucks, and as was announced on Dynamite, so that part's not a spoiler. But that was the one match that was kind of, that pulled the crowd down. And I don't think it was their fault, because I was kind of talking to my buddy about that, you know, and he's just like, no, it was a fun match, you know, it was a standard Young Bucks match, you know, everything you would expect to see in a Young Bucks match, it was in that match, so it was good, and I was happy I got to see the Young Bucks, but it was just, like, after the Battle Royal, basically a 20-man Royal Rumble in two rings is what we got to see, which, that's why I recommend you watch Rampage, for that exact reason, watch that Battle Royal. After that, you can skip it if you want, you know, but I would watch that, because the Young Bucks match was a was decent, but it was like after that, after the Battle Royal and after Blood and Guts, it's just like, ugh, you can't, how can you just have a normal tag team match now, you know? And then the main event was Nyla Rose versus Toni Storm. By this point, most of the crowd had left. There, nobody, like, well over half of the arena had left by the time Nyla Rose and Toni Storm were, they were like the last match of the night. You know, you could call it the main event. They're the main event of Rampage. And they had a hell of a match. It was just, the crowd wasn't there for it anymore. So, you know, the crowd might sound dead or, you know, you might see empty seats. That's why everybody just kind of ducked out at that point. People stuck around for the Young Bucks match and then they left after that. So I'd kind of pitched to my buddy. I was like, all right, so depending on how tired you are, here's what we can do. Because, you know, I didn't care to necessarily stick around for Nyla and Toni Storm either. No offense to either one of them, though. I mean, both chicks put on an awesome match. It was a very good back and forth, good fight, you know. But it was just, it's been a long, long night. At this point, we're at midnight, you know. So it's from going in the building at 6, you know, it's a 6-hour show. It's like, all right, I'm ready to peace out here. But it was, I asked him, you know, I was like, do you, so we can leave now after this Young Bucks match, or, if you want, I said, I'm pretty sure Tony Khan always comes out with a couple of the wrestlers after the show to talk to the crowd. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we stuck, we hung out. And they did. Immediately after Rampage went off the air and the music stopped playing and stuff, it was... Oh, even before this, I want to mention, you know, how I said Tony Khan came out like 3-4 times to talk to the crowd. And right before Rampage, he came out the hype and said that he was going to do the Battle Royal. But even as the music was playing, like, if you watch Rampage and that intro, you know, with the video package that plays during the intro, as that was playing, Tony Khan ran back out the tunnel and just did he was jumping up and down and stuff, like, trying to get one last big, like, well, come on, everybody, let's go. Like, as, like, literally, if he wouldn't have got out of the way in, like, 5 seconds, the cameras would have fucking caught him as the pyro was going off for the show. So, yeah, and I appreciate that kind of energy. I really like Tony Khan. I really do. He's very quirky. He's very awkward. He's very weird and nerdy and dorky and strange. But he's one of us, dude. He's a wrestling fan through and through. He's living his goddamn dream. And you can be a hater if you like, or you can just acknowledge that he's a weird guy with weird quirks that's new to the business, but respect him nonetheless and appreciate him for who he is. He came out, and he has fun with his shit, man. He came out after the show immediately. So, like, he didn't give you time to, like, think that the show was over. You know, as soon as the music stopped, he came out. He had the microphone. He was just like, thanked everybody again. He walked down to the ring, and then he brought out Danhausen, was one of the first people. And, you know, I couldn't hear anything he was saying, but it's just a bullshit, like, after party. Like, thanks, you know. It's almost like you come back out and do your second, like, curtain call type thing, you know. Everybody just kind of comes out and takes a bow and thanks the crowd or just does more a little bit more of a skit or something. So Danhausen came out. Then Hook came out, which was dope. The crowd popped that was there, propped for Hook. And Hook just kind of looked around, and he was just, like, nodded his head. And he's just like, yeah, it's pretty sweet. And he just kind of fist-bumped Danhausen and Tony Khan and turned around and walked back in the tunnel. So it was just, it was amusing. It was very in character for Hook to just be like, yeah, okay, cool. All right, see what you guys got going on here. I'm leaving now. Peace. Oh God, who else? Thunder Rosa stayed in there for the end, and Toni Storm stayed in there for the end, and so I totally probably just spoiled the ending for you. I know you were dying to see who was gonna win that one anyway, right? I think -1 came out. That little brat was out there a few times. That little snot-nosed punk ass kid. I think that's all. I think that's all who came out to celebrate the end there. And they all just kind of said their piece on the microphone real quick and then that was it. That was the end of the show. And then we all left. So, just, you know, if I had to just kind of recap it here to sum it up, Moxley, biggest pop of the night by far, like the next level pop. I wouldn't say like Road Warrior, maybe Road Warrior pop. I mean, if that's the highest level, I don't know if he was that level. I'll put it like this. I was there for Punk's return, and that was by far the biggest reaction in the history of professional wrestling, period, end of story. Don't care, right? Nothing ever has topped the roar of that. Maybe very few. I know Triple H came back that one year in Madison Square Garden. He got a lot of hype. Moxley was louder than anybody had been the entire night before, noticeably. So there was Moxley by far. Then you got to give it to Eddie Kingston. You got to give it to FTR. And, yeah, I would say those were the top three reactions of the night. Honorable mention to Judas. It didn't, like I said, because it's not a pop per se, but it was certainly everybody in the building was participating to the level that they would be cheering and going apeshit on a normal pop. And they were singing along for my, you know, the Wild Thing. That was part of it too. Maybe that is part of the act, you know, because Jericho gets the hype for Judas. You know, music is important, and people were singing Wild Thing and going it was just wild. Obviously, the craziest spot of the night was the Sammy getting thrown off the top of the cage. Funniest part of the night was just watching Moxley try to figure out how to climb down from the cage. He took his boots off. He sat on top of the cage and was trying to unlace his entire... And if you've ever heard a wrestler say that the boots take a long-ass time, it was good that they weren't on any time crunch to film Rampage, to like go live with Rampage, right? That they were able to just film it, because Moxley spent considerable time on top of the cage trying to figure out his life and how to get the fuck down. That was it, man. The crowd was hot. Detroit was in it, man. They were in the fucking house. They delivered. That was a wild, wild, wild show. Just as far as the enthusiasm, man, they held it as long as they could hold it. Kind of gave out once the Young Bucks had their match, but by that point, we had seen a full Dynamite, Dark, and Dynamite ended with a Blood and Guts. Then we got a fucking 20-man two-ring Royal Rumble match with big stars. Hobbs was in there. Keith Lee was in it. Ricky Starks was in it. Like, it was a very star-studded, definitely all their top mid-card guys were in there, for sure. Brody King was in there. There was one spot. I'll spoil one spot. You made it all the way to the end of the Battle Royal. You just gotta watch this Battle Royal. It's a fun Battle Royal. There was one spot where that Brody King does, an elimination that Brody King does, that's fucking sick, and I've never seen it before. And you have to see, go out of your way to watch it, even if it's just on YouTube or something. I normally skip Rampage, so, but if you get the chance, watch the Battle Royal at the very least. And it was fun. It was a great time. One of the funnest wrestling shows I've been to. I don't think anything will ever beat Punk's return last summer, but and I went to a Royal Rumble at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, the year that Randy Orton won, that we talked about earlier. I was in Detroit, actually. And I think that might have been a funner show than this, but maybe. And then maybe like my first, I remember my very, I went to my very first wrestling show ever was a SmackDown / ECW taping, and it was the go home SmackDown before WrestleMania 23. So like Stone Cold came out as a surprise and did the stunner on JBL. JBL was out gonna like outdrink him or something, and Austin just stunnered his ass. That was dope. But like, let's get this coffee out of the way. But I would rank this up very highly. I don't know, maybe top three's probably fair. If not, fourth. I mean, this was a very, very good show to attend. I highly recommend if you have the chance to go to an AEW show. It's a fucking blast, dude. Their production quality, other than just me not being able to hear the sound from where I was sitting, their production quality is as on par as WWE's is. Like, when you go there, it looks like a WWE show production-wise. You know, the whole set, the cameras, everything. It's indistinguishable, other than, like, the names on the banners, AEW, from a WWE show. So you're not going to feel like you're going to some second rate. Even my buddy, you know, like I said, he was kind of a casual fan. Even he was just like, you know, until I saw this with my own eyes, I still kind of thought of AEW as an indie fed. Even though he knows they're on TV, and even though he sees them on TV in arenas and stuff, like, he was impressed that they were in Little Caesars Arena, because he's a Red Wings fan and shit, you know? So he's like, this is big time. You know, like, yeah, they're big time. So, highly recommend you go. You will have such a blast. The crowd is fun. They make it fun. The wrestlers really go out of their way to put on a good show. Tony Khan is a madman. And he will come out and show that side of himself to you multiple times, maybe. Just a great time. So I'm going to, we're at about an hour and a half. Jesus Christ. Thank you if you did listen all the way to the end. I very much appreciate you listening to my live in-person review of Blood and Guts. If you like that, please like, follow, and subscribe at Seth Grimes Media. Peace, love, and pizza. Check out my pro wrestling podcast. And we'll catch you on the next side. Peace.